All right. It's Wednesday. We have Todd Caputo on the show again. Air traffic is stopped. We're going to figure out how many EV chargers we need in the year 2030. And whatever else happens to come up in the next 12 to 15 minutes, you're going to get that. Everywhere I go, people really want to know how we roll. Who I is and who I be. They stop and stare when they see me. So it's been a wild Wednesday already. Kyle is on the ground in Phoenix because we were at an NCM 20 group with David Kane yesterday and the day before. He was flying out this morning. I flew home yesterday and he texted me saying every flight across the U.S. is stopped fully. And, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is like, is there a problem? Right? Like not like a computer problem, like a real problem. And, you know, the U.S. was pretty quick to say it's not a cyber attack, but their system called NOTAM, which alerts pilots and crew to safety advisories, went down. Like one piece of software went down for the FAA and they stopped everything. And it represents over 21,000 flights scheduled today, 2.9 million people moving around the country. And then we just got word before we hit like live stream that they're starting to resume some flights. So your wife is not home right now, right?
So yeah, I was up in New York with my wife. I got home last night late. I'm glad I got here. I'm glad I got back to North Carolina. So she's supposed to fly home tonight. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, but no doubt.
I wonder, do you think insurance companies insure stuff like this for airlines when stuff like that happens?
Like I mean, if you buy the flight insurance?
Well, no. I mean, I'm talking for consumers. I'm talking about for the airlines themselves. I wonder if they have insurance for stuff like that. I'm curious.
I think that would be expensive.
Because it's a really random, odd thing where every flight in the country is canceled.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the last.
The odds are pretty low.
Very. Yeah. I don't know. Let's see. I'm thinking like an insurance salesman, like an actuary.
Yeah. Maybe
we can sell some. I don't think anyone's lining up to insure that.
Well, it's business interruption insurance really is what it is, right? I just wonder if that would be something that would be covered.
I don't know. Wow. Yeah. That's a great question. But it's good to know that we know in the auto industry, so many people travel all the time, everywhere all the time. So there are likely thousands of our brothers and sisters in the auto industry held up at airports right now are going to be held up today. But you know what? That's just a little blip. We can handle that.
I wonder if it's private jets too. I'm going to guess yes.
I would think so.
Yeah, probably.
I would think so. Yeah, I mean, like if the warning system is down and I'm in a private jet, I'm still probably like, yeah, maybe we could just hang out here for a minute.
Paul, you're a Sodu private jet that says a Sodu down the side of it.
That'll be the day. One day. We'll do that. We need to move our people around. We need to move our people around. A couple other things going on. Obviously, we are teeing up very quickly heading towards NADA show, which is going to be full of just a lot of handshakes and hugs and new technologies and lots of stuff to learn. The opening party is going to have Armadillo Racing. I've never been a part of that, but the Isotu team is going to be there in full effect. Todd, you're going to be there in full effect.
I'm going to be there. I can't wait.
When do you get in?
I never miss it ever. I've missed it.
How many do you think you've gone to?
25.
Let's do it.
I don't miss it. I just don't.
Yeah.
It's something crazy.
It always amazes me how you randomly run into people in a show so big, but you and I have randomly run into each other at NADA.
Just remember, you can always judge how good business is based on how many ice sculptures and parties there are at NADA.
Is that the count?
So I remember like 2009, right? After the crash.
Yep.
NADA and those dealers that were there will remember. Like there was nothing.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Yeah.
Yeah, it was PBJ and bologna and stuff like that. And like that was about it. Yeah. So but then business got better, the parties get better, the ice sculptures come back. But yeah, this will be good. Dallas will be interesting. First time I don't ever remember being in Dallas before ever.
No, I don't think so.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be really good to see some people in the industry and good to see you and your team there. I can't wait.
Yeah, likewise. And we're bringing a full team. We're bringing like 15 people, full production. You will see the pirate ship that is Isotu just kind of like stampeding its way around NADA. There's also a lot of ancillary events we're going to be a part of, events prior to the show open. So we're going to post a list of everywhere we'll be. I'm going to be teaching a workshop on Saturday. And so we're going to be everywhere and anywhere.
I'm coming to your workshop then. What are you going to teach me? I'm coming.
How to build a recession-proof marketing strategy.
Oh, perfect. I'll be there.
And the thing is, like, I had to come up with that like 9 months ago. Because with NADA, you know, typically Kyle and I are building presentations like as we're heading in to the place that we're speaking, because like we try to be as relevant as possible, but this one, NADA, you have to have your stuff in like 9 months in advance.
Yeah, I know. It's all nobody knows what's going to happen.
So it was like, we'll take a gamble. And the worst case scenario, a lot of the principles are very similar to just building a good marketing strategy in general.
Correct.
So absolutely. We'll do that. We have a fun question to answer today on the show. And I was really just looking for an excuse to use our little trigger pad from Year End Extravaganza. So we're going to talk about how many EV chargers will it take to keep things rolling in the year 2030?
In the year 2030.
This is our little preparation track here.
Good luck with that one.
In the year 2030.
Okay, okay. The new question that a report from S&P Global Mobility is trying to answer is how many EV chargers will it take to keep things rolling in 2030 at the rate of EV adoption? There are currently about 160,000 chargers, you know, about 17,000 Tesla superchargers, 126,000+ of level two chargers, and about 10,000 level three chargers. These are public chargers that are around for anybody's use. There's about 1.9 million EVs on the road. Sold in 2022, on the road currently. Sales accounted for 5.4% of all sales in 2022. So we see the rate of adoption increasing. There's an estimated rate of adoption of 40%, this report says, in 2030, and says the U.S. will need to quadruple the number of chargers by 2025. So here's the progression. We have about 160,000 chargers on the ground now. By the year 2025, we need to quadruple the amount of chargers, and then 8x the amount of chargers by 2030, leading to 1.2 million level two chargers and 109,000 level three chargers by 2027. The whole thing is like ramping up on this curve. So in the end, all said and done, the answer to the question, S&P thinks we need 2.1 million level two chargers and 172,000 level three chargers. So that's a question. Yeah. You own an EV. Right. I personally have a really hard time of thinking of any practicality of a level two charger when you're traveling, unless it's like somewhere where you can stay for quite a while. But what's your take on this?
So what about the grid? That's the first thing that comes to my head. We can't
power to the chargers.
Yeah. So it was really cold a few weeks ago. There was rolling blackouts like across the country because it got so cold and everybody was using their heat, their electric heat pumps. Like there was rolling blackouts here where I live in Charlotte. They had some. What about the grid? You can have all the chargers in the world, but I'm not the smartest guy in the world. But the first thing I think about is you got to power all these things. You got to power all these chargers. And then the other thing I would think about too, from an investment standpoint, is okay, who's gonna build these chargers? Who's gonna make them? Who's gonna make the components? Because obviously, if you're gonna bet on the stock market and be an investor, you want to figure out who's on the know, who's going to be in, who's mm-hmm. going to get the contracts. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are going to be, they're going to be government deals with state, local, federal. I don't know. Again, love EVs. Don't get me wrong. I still think it's, I don't know. I don't want to call it a pipe dream because I don't think it's a pipe dream, but I think it's going to take a lot longer than, it's 2023, 7 years is going to go by that fast. And I don't think it's going to truly happen. Is every gas station going to have these things?
Well, tell me about your charging experience, because in the article we linked up in the show notes from Electrek, they were one of the writers was talking about the level two EV chargers and how they're largely in useless areas. Like he mentioned, like at the Logan Airport, there's level two EV chargers, except you can't leave your car plugged in while you travel. They won't let you do that. He's like, so what are you going to do with a level two charger at an airport? Nothing.
You can't look. I got a Tesla, right? And I drive it, and I drove to Florida with it 11 hours each way to see my grandmother before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, no problems, right? But I was in the South. It's warm. You get that up in New York where you and I are from on a cold day, mm-hmm. you got a problem. And I don't, unless they really change and improve the technology, there's going to be certain parts of the country where it's not going to make any sense to own one and not going to make any sense to build out the infrastructure because of the cold.
They just,
weather is a big deal.
I almost put this article in here. It's funny you mentioned that because there's like some new procedures in tech coming out where they're using heat pumps to heat the vehicle because that's what drains the battery, is keeping the vehicle, the interior, warm. Right. Cause there's nothing to like pull heat from. So it just literally is a battery discharging to create hot air, which is a very inefficient process. And so they think maybe heat pumps or something like that. So there was a Joe Rogan interview where Peter Zeihan I'm going to find the clip and we'll post it. But, you know, he thinks that EVs aren't going to be sustainable in any way. And we have a broad variety of thinking across the spectrum. Joe Pistel, look him up on LinkedIn, a friend of yours and mine, had a lightning bolt post yesterday that talks about Toyota and how their hybrid approach is so much more sustainable and ready. And everybody bought in that Elon Musk stream. And now the companies that did are going to find themselves behind because the hybrid approach is so much more sustainable.
They should be hybrids. Hybrids, just, it's common sense to me that it should be hybrids. And the people that are running Toyota know it too. And look, at, I wouldn't bet against Toyota ever.
I know. Right?
Toyota 30, 40 years ago were sorely mistaken. There's people out there that got Toyota franchises for nothing.
Yep.
And they've done extremely, extremely well. You get your hands on a Toyota franchise, it's like gold. So it's got to be hybrids. It makes a lot more sense to me. When I was in Syracuse, I got a flat tire the other day. First time in a very long time. And I had to go through the experience of roadside assistance. And again, I was driving a Toyota 4Runner, right? Mm-hmm. TRD Pro, flat tire completely, like down to zero. And the roadside experience was terrible. But I thought to myself, well, what if everybody's driving EVs? What's going to happen if for some reason you die on the side of the road? Mm-hmm. How long is it going to take to charge up your car to get you to a charging station? And what kind of equipment are mobile service companies or mobile service car dealers going to have in order to just give people enough juice to get to where they're going if their EV dies?
Well, you think about that too. I mean, that raises a whole other question. If heating your vehicle discharges it quickly and you get a flat tire in the winter in a cold climate and your battery dies, like, you know, even if you have a quarter tank of fuel, like, your car is going to run for a really long time if it's just at idle. Right? Because you're just sipping the gas. EVs are not going to be the same story. So it's just, you know, it's interesting going through a winter where there's been a large number of EV involvement and adoption, and we're just starting to address these issues. It's just going to be a common discussion around the community, not only internally in auto, but broadly in retail. And we'll see where it goes.
I read an article that they were considering banning natural gas stoves.
I just got pinged with it like six times from six different sources yesterday, like Wall Street Journal. Yeah. And they're like, hey, I don't know what that's all about. I haven't read anything about it yet.
My wife told me, and again, I don't cook. I can't cook a thing. I can cook on the grill, but that's about as far as it goes. She said that when you cook on an oven with its natural gas or propane, that things cook a lot better on an oven.
Without a doubt.
That way than on an electric range, which makes sense
I know enough about cooking. Is trying to control temperature with electric is very, very difficult. I mean, yeah, it's just a nuanced thing.
Like, there needs to be, I guess, common sense. I think a more common sense approach is good.
They said it was for safety reasons is just in the notice that I saw. But I don't know. I think that the world has been doing okay with gas safety for like more than 100 years, right? People have been cooking inside with gas and propane and fire and all that stuff. We can have flames inside. We've shown we can handle it.
When they're going to mandate, I think I read about this in New York. I was reading Syracuse.com. They're going to mandate that any new homes in New York that are built have to have a heat pump.
Oh,
and they can't have a traditional furnace. Did you read that?
No.
Yeah, Google that one.
Sounds about right. Well, look, it's the fun part of living in New York, really. It keeps you on your toes, second only to California. David Long, a good friend of ours, says, California is not for the faint of heart. Living here, I wouldn't recommend it. He goes, but here we go. You know, it's like one of those things. Todd grew up in Syracuse, had a second-generation dealer, if you didn't know, and built a large used car operation, had a Chevy store, was acquired by Sonic Automotive a few years ago. So, and now he lives in North Carolina and still, obviously, once a dealer, always a dealer. Gets to work with dealers all across the country.
When I wear my, see my old Chevy hat?
I know. It's the original one. That's the original
Chevy. It's in my blood. I have the Chevy bow tie in my blood.
So I just want to hit a couple other quick news updates on EVs. You've probably seen this. We're not going to go too much into this. I also, Todd, I want to see what's on your mind while we have a few minutes left. Rivian's having some shift in issues. According to a Wall Street Journal article, several top executives, really long tenure ones, have recently left. Randy Frank, VP overseeing all their body engineering, as well as Steve Garwanski. He was the head of the supply chain. They were both there for a long time. Just late last year, Patrick Hunt, a senior strategy director, left. So obviously a lot of shakeup going there. Also, Tesla announced yesterday they're building a $775 million expansion on the $5.5 billion factory that they just made in Austin. a lot of things moving and shaking. I don't want to really hang on EVs too much longer because there's a whole other industry out of there. Speaking of the whole other industry. Stop.
Segway.
Time. Just had to use the Segway button at least once. Todd, you get to be in dealers all across the country. You pay attention to the news. You pay attention to the used car markets. What is at the top of mind? What seems to be coming up in conversations more than others? What's the top
dealers got a lot of water. There's a lot of water right now in inventory, especially stuff that's over 30 days. I mean, the used car market, I read an article the other day, market depreciated last year like 15%. I think it was 14.7%. Cox did an hour-long broadcast the other day about basically summarized 2022. Mm-hmm. I think there's water, and dealers are concerned about the water more than anything else. And there's inventory that just has to go. And I think that the next 6 months, we still need to hit bottom in the used car market. It'll happen. But if you don't have really, really, really good processes and you're not turning your inventory every 20 to 25 days and you're not running lean, you're going to have a problem. I do. Straight up.
But there you go.
We'll get through it. Car dealers know how to figure out things and we'll get through it. We always have. We always will. But I think that's top of mind more than anything else is they're looking at Viato or VinQ or whatever they use. And they're looking at their cost to market and they're looking at the price to market. And they've got inventory in buckets now that are, you go 30 or 45 days or 60 days out. Inventory that they own for 102, 103, 105% cost to market or more. It's a problem.
Yeah. You know, Brian Kramer, who many of you know, and if you don't follow him, you should follow him on LinkedIn because he releases a lot of great articles. Longtime dealer. He's with AccuTrade now. And basically he said, the used car appraisal process and how you buy cars is no longer like a straight line curve decision. He says it's more like an algorithm when you're pricing cars and acquiring cars. Like he said, it's just more complicated than it used to be. It's just more complicated than it used to be.
Well, it's more risky. It's more risky right now. It wasn't really risky last year when cars were going up.
Oh, heck yeah.
You put whatever you wanted in a car and you could either sell it to a retail customer or sell it on CarOffer or take it to the auction and make money with it. Sure. But now it's the opposite. So I think a lot of dealers are just, they're nervous, especially with more expensive cars, about really what to put in them because nobody knows where the bottom is.
Yeah.
If you don't know where the bottom is, it's not a good place to be. But again, you still got to make deals. You got to recondition cars really fast. You got to merchandise them properly and you got to turn them really, really fast.
There you go. So much complexity. But like you said, deals are figured out because they always figure out. The question will be who figures 100%. It out first because they're the ones that are going to disproportionately win. Let's go get Wednesday. Todd, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah.
And for all you flying, see you soon.